Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, 810 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Julio Diaz is the host of Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock on Saturdays here on News Radio, and also the Pensacola Movie Club. You can share time with them watching movies and talking about them on Thursday nights. Follow them on Facebook. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, the bike riders. What was this?
I'm still not 100% sure how I feel about this movie. It is a good movie overall, and the performances are really good in it. But so just to give you kind of the overview, this is a film about kind of the rise of motorcycle gang culture.
Okay.
In the mid-60s. It kind of takes place over a course of about 8 years, from like 65 to about 73, somewhere in there. And it's told through this device of this guy who, I guess, wrote the book that this is based on. He's a photographer. He went and took photos of these guys and did interviews with them and released this book that is based on the movie, where the author's a character in the movie, you know, doing interviews with people. And it just, it's this weird kind of like, it really wants to be like the Goodfellas of motorcycle gangs.
Okay.
In a lot of ways. Like it's got that kind of like, hey, here's this sprawling multi-year story. And there's, you know, it even like opens on this voiceover of, you know, of a character as a freeze frame happens, kind of the same way Goodfellas did with, you know, Henry Hill. As long as I lived, I always wanted to be a gangster. That kind of thing to it, but it's not anywhere near the film that Goodfellas is.
Gotcha.
Goodfellas,
okay,
is amazing. This is it's worth seeing for the performances, especially Jodie Comer is fantastic.
Oh, she's awesome.
Kind of,
yeah.
She's kind of the POV character. Austin Butler and Tom Hardy are the other lead actors. It's just kind of the thing for me is it's just kind of a character study more than anything.
Okay.
And stuff kind of just happens, you know. It's like it's kind of light on plot.
All right, so it ranges around, and you kind of touch the topic, but it's not exactly the most coherent thing in the end. Okay, I get
it's
you.
Good. It's good. It's not going to be like an Oscar winner, but it's going to be one that's like on TNT for dads every Sunday afternoon for generations.
How about Thelma? That's out today.
Yeah, not a prequel to Thelma and Louise.
It's
funny because there's been a social media thing going around recently that was, you know, is make a movie singular, like, you know, take Jaws and you take the SS Jaw, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
And when this was posted
around
one of the ones I did was Thelma, thinking, you know, oh, that's the singular of Thelma and Louise. Not knowing that there was a movie coming out called Thelma.
Gotcha. All right.
Like, oh, well, that joke didn't last long. This is getting the best reviews of the week, actually. 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. This stars June Squibb, who has never, believe it or not, done a lead role. She's a, you know, well-known character actor, but never been in a lead role. And it is an action film about and kind of like a parody of like the tropes of action films, but it's a 7-year-old grandmother who gets wronged and goes out and Mission Impossible style takes her vengeance back. Great reviews on this. Solid cast with Clark Gregg and Parker Posey playing her son and daughter-in-law. Or I might have that backwards on me, daughter and son-in-law.
Sure.
And like I said, great reviews, apparently very funny.
All right. We only got a couple moments left. Let's go quickly. The Exorcism.
You didn't see this already? Yes, I know there was a Russell Crowe Exorcism movie earlier this year, but this is not The Pope's Exorcist.
Okay.
This is The Exorcism, and he's actually playing an actor playing an exorcist in this movie. But this is a horror movie, and there's something weird going on the production of this movie that he's on.
It sounds not pretty meta. It sounds like it could have been Nicolas Cage role. So, okay, fair enough. I am Celine Dion.
This is a documentary about the artist Celine Dion and the kind of the medical issues that she's had that we've all known about her recently, and kind of a love letter to her fans / story about her struggle that's going on.
Okay. And a concert show about the band Ghost right here, right now?
This is going to be very niche, but if you're familiar with Ghost, they are a very theatrical metal / arena rock band. This is purely for the fans. If you are a fan of this band and you know who you are, they have a lot of iconography that you may have seen, even if you haven't heard their music.
Okay.
This is purely for the fans.
And what are you going to watch next week?
We're waiting to see if we're going to get anything else. The only big release next week is A Quiet Place Day One, which is, of course, a prequel to the two previous Quiet Place films, apparently without anybody that was in those films, as far as I can see, anyway.
Of course. I mean, that's why you do a prequel, obviously.
Yeah. I feel like that series just feels like it's kind of a one-trick pony to me.
I agree.
Was very good, but...
Julio Diaz, he is the host of Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock Saturday, and the Pensacola Movie Club on Facebook and in real life. Julio, as always, thanks for the time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks, Andrew.
You bet. John Pickens got traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by Frontier Motors, the only dealer Dave Ramsey recommends in Pensacola. That's Frontier Motors on Beverly Parkway. Not seeing any accidents. I-10, I-110 flowing very smoothly right now. Starting to see some delays if you're headed south or southwest from Pace into Pensacola over the fields right there. You're going to see some delays due to that construction. Other than that, traffic's looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives. And this history of the Blue Angels is brought to you by Naval Aviation Museum Foundation.
In the early years, the Blue Angels included a routine that used all four Bearcats in pursuit of an enemy Japanese Zero. This enemy aircraft was actually a training plane, the North American SNJ-5 Texan, painted bright yellow with a red Japanese rising sun on the fuselage and wings. The maneuver, called a thatch weave, in which the Bearcats would chase the Mach Zero, was a reenactment of an actual combat routine used in the Pacific Campaign. This tactic spelled doom for enemy aircraft over Guadalcanal, where it was first conceived and practiced. The early U.S. fighter planes of World War II were slow and unmaneuverable compared to the Japanese Zeros. By weaving back and forth in rapid succession, the American pilots caused the Japanese pilots to overshoot and often find themselves vulnerable to a shootdown by the American planes because the weaving action never allowed the Zero to target one American plane without exposing itself to the guns of the other. In the Blue Angels routine, this aerial dogfight would awe the spectators and then leave them stunned at what happened next. The Blue Angels would toy with the Zero for a while and then send it down smoking and out of control. The pilot of the Zero would eject, parachute safely, and be taken prisoner by a detachment of Marines on the ground. Meanwhile, the Zero would crash into the ground just out of the view of the crowd. Of course, the parachutist was an 80-pound dummy, the smoke was simulated, and the crash was an illusion. The Zero would simply swoop low across the horizon and fly away and out of sight. But that didn't stop would-be rescuers from mounting a search. It was not unusual for police, ambulance, and fire departments in the community to respond to frantic calls from citizens who saw the pilot eject and the plane go down. This despite the fact that the appropriate departments were notified in advance of the routine. This crowd pleaser was performed through their 1949 season. I'll be back with more after this.
Hi, I'm retired Rear Admiral Kyle Kozed, President and CEO of the Naval Aviation Museum Foundation. You are cleared for takeoff at the National Naval Aviation Museum. From thrilling hands-on experiences to historical insights, the National Naval Aviation Museum is where dreams take flight. Go Mach speed in a flight simulator. Let inspiration soar among the 150 beautifully restored aircraft. Remember the moments in the giant screen theater and capture it all in the flight deck store. Visit NavalAviationMuseum.org to plan your visit today.
The Blue Angels go to war, and this time, it's for real. In the next episode of News Radio's History of the Blue Angels.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at Georgetown Technical College for Boat Smart on the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10 a.m. Key Marine sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service technicians, they hire students from Georgetown Technical College. Have a boating question for Stefan? Then give us a call at 437-1620. It's a dream team, so join them today at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Sometimes a family needs a little help to deal with life stresses. You can contribute to happy, healthy childhoods with a few simple steps. Notice families under stress. Offer a helping hand. Give your time. Talk about healthy child development. Connect a family with resources. Contributing to a great childhood can be as easy as being a good neighbor. For more, PreventChildAbuseFL.org. This message is sponsored by the Ounce of Prevention Fund of Florida, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this radio station.
The Dave Ramsey Show, weeknight 7 to 10, before WEAR-TV News, on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the state of Louisiana. After this week's decision to tear down the wall of separation between church and state by requiring all school classrooms to display a Ten Commandments poster by next year, the poster must include an explanation that these rules were, quote, a prominent part of American public education for almost three centuries, end quote. Also, displays of the Mayflower Compact, the Declaration of Independence, and the Northwest Ordinance are allowed, but not required. Obviously, we are horrified by this development. Have we really worked so hard for all these decades to stamp out every last vestige of public religion in America only to have children instructed to be accountable to God, their parents, their spouses, and to respect other people's property, all in one fell poster? No, I say. If the impressionable minds of children start thinking the Bible is some reliable source of guidance and instruction, can you imagine what horrendous things they might find inside its pages besides just these Ten Commandments? They might learn about the love of God, the consequences of sin, the wisdom of the Proverbs, or even, gasp, the gospel of Jesus Christ. But obviously, the Ten Commandments themselves are unacceptable. Putting aside the problems with having children think about God, respecting His name, putting Him first in their lives, and dedicating a whole day each week to Him, literally every commandment is contrary to our own religion. Honor your father and your mother is obviously a heteronormative cisgender marginalization of anyone who's got two mommies or two daddies, and it implicitly criticizes single-parent households, affirms the highly restrictive nuclear family, and teaches children the unacceptable principle of submission to parental authority, which we've been trying to subvert all this time. Thou shalt not kill certainly overlooks the obvious right of women to terminate a pregnancy and for the old or the infirm to end their miserable lives through euthanasia. Thou shalt not commit adultery reinforces the sexually restrictive concepts of waiting for marriage, getting married, and staying married to one person of the opposite sex for life. What is this, 1990? Thou shalt not steal only serves to reinvigorate the misguided concepts of private property and capitalism, as if anyone's property isn't really everyone's property. Thou shalt not lie implies that there is such a thing as objective truth, and that somehow words can be either true or false when, of course, we preach that truth is in the eye of the beholder, because relativism is our entire worldview. If there's no such thing as truth, how can anyone even really tell a lie? Am I right? And thou shalt not covet? How can we promote class envy if we don't make coveting a way of life? And if there were no coveting, how would we justify the redistribution of wealth from those who earn a lot to those that earn little or nothing? No, these Ten Commandments are no way to build a morally relativistic, sexually liberated, collectivist society of self-indulgent, rebellious hedonists. Obviously, we cannot have such dangerous ideas taught to children in Louisiana schools, or anywhere else for that matter. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Second, World Aquatics, the international governing body for all water sports, after it prohibited transgender swimmer Leah Thomas from swimming in the upcoming Paris Olympics, and won its legal case against her in the International Court of Arbitration for Sport. Thomas, who of course became famous for being the first transgender athlete to win an NCAA college title in 2022, had sued to overcome the prohibition against athletes who had experienced any part of male puberty from swimming competitively as women. In denying Thomas her Gaia-given right to identify as the gender of her heart rather than the gender of her body, World Aquatics has shown itself to be yet another agent of patriarchal repression. Refusing to usher in the golden age of genderless liberty, our parishioners' mantra for daily. The claims by World Aquatics that Anyone who's experienced male puberty has physical advantages in endurance, power, speed, strength, and lung size even after testosterone mitigation are true, but of course totally beside the point. Women's sports are not intended for creating a fair and safe space within which women are protected from male physical domination. Women's sports are in reality just another platform from which we can continue to advance our goal of total gender anarchy and liberation. Although the rainbow-colored rings of the Olympic Games appear to be LGBTQ+ positive, sadly, until men are free to beat women at their own games, they will continue to be the segregated, repressive chains of transphobic cisgender bigotry that we see today. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we want to talk a little bit about the excellent example of woke-topianism being implemented in Spokane, one of the more vibrant street intersections in this idyllic corner of the People's Republic of Washington, has been painted with the pride flag. But local teenagers have been defacing it with their lime scooters by deliberately creating skid marks on the hallowed rainbow mural. But the reaction to all levels from Governor Jay Inslee down to the local police has been beautifully ferocious. He signed into effect a law making it a felony to deface a public mural, and one of the older teens is now facing up to 5 years in jail and a $10,000 fine. As the sixth commandment of our religion teaches, thou shalt not trifleth with thine holy rainbow flag. Now, for those who say this is excessive punishment, we ask, is there any such thing as going too far in hurting people so they learn the lesson that you must love everyone? You must love everyone! Moreover, Lime has now geofenced the mural so that scooters aren't even able to ride across it anymore, properly protecting this sacred road space from the hate-skidding antics of those troublesome teenagers who tried in vain to smudge out gay pride with their pathetic rental scooters. What we particularly love about this whole episode is the clear message being sent that once a rainbow flag touches something even as mundane as a road, it transforms that thing into a hallowed object of veneration and worship. That formerly humble intersection is no longer just a stretch of asphalt, but now a sacred nexus where the entire community of non-judgmental love, pigmentary art, and the manifest presence of the holy acronym string come together in a way that brings a tear of joy to this pastor's heart. As the above-average book says, "Yea, though I scoot through the valley of the shadow of bigotry, I shall fear no skid mark. Woe unto all who offend."
Woe unto all who offend.
As you depart today, please be sure to sign the Get Better Soon card for Annabelle Fishwaller, who suffered an extreme bout of euphoria at last night's summer solstice celebration and hasn't woken up since. As many of you know all too well, worshiping the planetary high points can be a powerful and transcendental experience. Refreshments this week are provided by Blank Slate, the all-natural gastro-cleanse pub featuring 17 different flavors of chalky smooth diuretics and laxatives. Yes, you can wash down a lovely high-fiber snack cake with a joyful swig of Blank Slate, lime, lemon, boysenberry, and now again available in original Mylanta flavor. Wipe your intestines free with a shot of Blank Slate. You can really taste the virtue.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
828 on News Radio Pensacola. If you have employees in your company, you have benefits to deal with, insurance, dental, vision, life and disability, resources, human resources, payroll, all of that. I know from personal experience how great Torgerson Causey is at managing this stuff. We've been using them for about 7 years here at News Radio in Cat Country. Fabulous. Customer service, better plans and options than we had before, and I heartily endorse them. 433-9996 for Torgerson Causey. Get a free, no-obligation review of what you're doing today from Torgerson Causey. John Pickens got traffic for us. John?
Brought to you by Knox Pest Control, their family serving your family since 1929. For information on a free pest or termite quote, visit knoxpest.com. Knox knocks them out. I-10, I-110 flowing very smoothly right now. No issues there. I'm John Pickens with the traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. And, you know, my family's experience with Pensacola State College has been outstanding. Seriously, when I talked to one of our salespeople about, you know, hey, can you represent Pensacola State College? Can I? Yes, we've been love them. We got two kids already went through dual enrollment at PSC 3 years, got them a year and a half of college credit when they went to UWF. They, you know, working on their ME degree now. We got another one that's going to be going to them probably in the fall for the same thing, dual enrollment, small class size, teacher-focused teachers, and willing to work with you and accommodate needs and tailor things to your student or yourself if it's you. So if you've got a high schooler who needs dual enrollment credit or you're thinking about a change in life, Pensacola State is a great resource for the traditional or the non-traditional student. Find out what PSC can do to help you reach your future goals at Pensacola State. UAV.edu. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our quick headlines. David?
Well, Kevin Costner says he is not returning to Yellowstone. He made that announcement last night on Instagram. He says he's made the decision after working on his new film series. So Kevin Costner will not be going back to Yellowstone for the second half of season 5.
All I want to know is who took Kevin Costner to the train station.
Fox News. I'm Chris Foster. The Trump campaign announcing monthly fundraising numbers has basically caught up with the money raised for President Biden.
Trump campaign announcing $141 million in donations. That's compared to $85 million from the Biden camp. Now, recall the Trump guilty verdict came in at the end of May, likely one of the reasons. Michael Bloomberg has given $20 million to the Biden camp. You also have Timothy Mellon has given $50 million to the Trump super PAC. That's the son of Paul Mellon, the great philanthropist and grandson of Andrew Mellon, the banker and art collector. And he's the former Treasury Secretary.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson. Federal Judge Eileen Cannon, overseeing former President Trump's classified documents case in Florida, starts 3 days of hearings about whether Jack Smith, who's brought charges against Trump in Florida and Washington, was appointed illegally. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, News Radio Pensacola, 76 degrees and mostly clear skies this morning. I'm David Wayne. Governor Ron DeSantis signing two bills yesterday to help veterans across the state. One of those, House Bill 725, that'll expand the eligibility for admission to a long-term veterans care facility.
To include spouses and surviving spouses of qualifying veterans.
And DeSantis also signed House Bill 1329. That bill will revise existing programs and expand benefits to help veterans transition to civilian life. It also requires middle and high school students to get history lessons on veterans and Memorial Day and gives free hunting and fishing licenses to disabled vets. The Santa Rosa County Board of Commissioners meet next week, and they're expected to take up a resolution that might be a bit controversial.
Millions of illegal immigrants are invading our country, and it's having an effect on the citizens of Santa Rosa County. What this resolution will do will send a message saying that illegal aliens are not welcome in Santa Rosa County.
Commissioner James Calkins told Chance in North M Streets.
Maybe 4 or 5 shots. And I'm like, wow, them gunshots. And a few minutes later, we had like 5 or 6 more. We don't have that problem. Not over in this area, we don't have that problem. I mean, it's been, I haven't even heard of anybody getting shot in this area. This is like the first.
And that's somebody that lives near the scene of that incident. PPD's Mike Wood said the shooting has not been connected, at least yet, to a string of ambush-style shootings that have taken place around Escambia County in recent months, although Mike Wood does say the investigation is still young. The Florida Highway Patrol now identifying the victim of that fiery crash on the Escambia Bay Bridge last week as a 44-year-old cantonment man. That update from yesterday afternoon. The man's name, though, has not been released. The crash did happen last Thursday on I-10 east from Pensacola into Milton. 4 vehicles were involved. Aside from the man who died, 3 other people were also taken to the hospital with minor injuries after that.
Really enjoyed this town hall meet. It's the first one I ever went to with the VA.
And those veterans talked with Channel 3. Some of the biggest issues discussed included a lack of access to mental health care, long wait times, and canceled appointments caused by a lack of providers at the VA clinic. The VA did say, though, that new clinics have been proposed here in Northwest Florida, including locations in Milton and Crestview that could be potentially coming down the road. It's 8:35 right now at News Radio. Let's get a look at our traffic on the 5s. John, what are you seeing?
Well, everything's flowing smoothly right now. I-10, I-110, all looking good. Not seeing any delays to let you know about. I'm John Pickens with traffic on the 5.
Thank you, John. Now our Channel 3 forecast.
Mostly sunny skies on Friday. Not expecting rain. There's a small chance for an afternoon shower, but I do not expect it anywhere in the area. And that is the theme of the weekend. Saturday and Sunday, more of the same. Lots of sun. Normally, we'd hit about 91 degrees. We'll be right around that number today. I think a little hotter than that this weekend, though, closer to 95 degrees, with, again, small rain chances and lows in the 70s. I'm meteorologist Christian Garman with your forecast for Friday for WEAR-TV.
And right now, 76 degrees. And partly cloudy skies in Pensacola, 74 in Gulf Breeze, 72 in Milton. Our next news at 9. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio Pensacola. And your money now, right now. So it's 8:36 at News Radio Pensacola. The markets today at the opening bell are mixed. The Dow is up 31 points at 39,165. S&P down just under 3 points at 54.70. The NASDAQ is down 5 points at 17,713.46. Our 10-year bond rate today is down just a bit at 4.2%. Gold prices down 60 cents at 23.68. And silver prices down 66 cents at $30.16. If you're invested in Bitcoin today, you're taking a little bit of a hit right now. It's down $1,200 at $63,704.88. And Joe Biden's presidential campaign says they successfully raised $85 million last month. This week, the Biden campaign touted hefty support from grassroots donors, said they entered June with over $212 million in funds raised. Inflation reportedly outpacing take-home pay for the next few years now. New research from MoneyWise found 97% of job pay has failed to keep up with inflation for the last 5 years. MoneyWise also says home prices have jumped by an average of 56% in the same time period. And the Supreme Court has upheld a Trump-era tax on foreign investments. That law from 2017, backed by Republicans, actually it had support from the Biden administration as well. It was meant to stop Americans from shielding their foreign earnings. Right now, 8:37, your next news at 9, breaking news anytime at News Radio Pensacola.
Are you hungry for news that keeps you informed, is local and dependable? Look no further than News Radio Pensacola on 92.3, 95.3, and on AM 1620. We're your trusted source for all the latest happenings in the Emerald Coast. From breaking news to in-depth reports, we've got you covered. Our team of experienced journalists brings you the stories that matter most to our community. Stay connected with local events, weather updates, and traffic reports, ensuring you're always one step ahead. We're News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
The hip, the hip, the hip, the hip, 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 hop, you don't stop.
Rap, 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 rap it up.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. Here on News Radio, at the end of the week, we like to have a couple of friends here in studio with me, and we just kind of rap about the news. It's a double meaning. See, it's a synonym or a homophone. Sorry. It's a, it's exactly not a synonym. It's the rap like we talk, and it's also the rap W. I'm sorry. I shouldn't explain things like that. Anyway, Butch Hansen, who is a retired captain in the United States Navy, a sub guy, Butch, welcome back. And former director of the Community Maritime Park Foundation, right?
Veterans Memorial Park.
Oh, what did I say? Community Maritime Park? I'm sorry to put that on you. And I think at one time budget analyst for the city council, right?
Correct. All correct.
Right, so he knows a thing or two. And then Jeremy Evans, who's also here.
Who knows nothing.
Yeah. Former chairman of the Escambia County Republican Party, right? So, and many times my go-to on political things. So the supervisor of election story.
Yeah.
This is bad. I mean, it's bad all around.
Yes.
Short version, if you haven't been paying attention, we find out a week after he tried to qualify that Bruce Childers, who is Pam Childers' husband, she's clerk of the court and comptroller, he filed to run against Robert Bender, who had previously been unopposed. I mean, the people who were going to maybe qualify didn't come through. So he files to run as a Republican. He brings his paperwork in on Wednesday. All good, approved, qualified on the website. You're good to go. A week later, as in yesterday, all of a sudden, he's not qualified because they say he didn't file the proper Form 6. The short version of this is apparently he filed the watermarked overview table of contents page but didn't file the actual 4 pages or 10 pages or whatever form that he's got because that's not what he thought was required and that's not what the supervisor of elections office said was not required. And he doesn't file it with them anyway. All he has to do to them is prove that he's done it is sort of the short version of all of this. Bender's office doesn't contact him, doesn't try to remedy it, had said with the John Johnson gaffe that or trouble that's why you come in not on Friday at 11:50, because if you come in on Wednesday, we can fix it. He came in on Wednesday, they didn't fix it, and here we are. The only opponent to Robert Bender is not in the race at the moment, And of course, the backstory is, of course, Pam Childers has been sort of at feud with the county commissioners, including Robert Bender, for the 401A retirement plan stuff. Jeremy, you want to take a crack at this? Because I've been talking about it all day.
I think there's two sides to every story. I think side one is Bruce Childers, obviously not a novice to this process. His wife has run for clerk of the courts. This is her fourth time going through the process. I know this Form 6, this is the first time that this process, I think, has been instituted in this way. But she successfully filed all the paperwork to run for her position, mm-hmm. which I think she's unopposed, and she's been reelected opposition. And so you would think that it would just be kind of copy and paste from what she did to what I'm doing. And then on the other side of it, I do think that there is a little bit of onus on the supervisor of elections office. If he brought it in on Wednesday, you stamp completed, there's a point where he had 2 days to rectify it, that maybe there is some opportunity for some grace because you said you're good.
Right.
And then after the fact, you say you're not good. So we'll see how it continues to play out. But I think that it's a situation where there's enough fault to go around, and then you have enough bad blood between the two of them that everyone's going to assume that the other side is the worst,
right?
Which is unfortunately where we are in Escambia politics. I just thought County Commission 1 was going to be our most sad story of the world, but
little
the supervisor
did you know.
of elections was going to come in and say, hold my beer.
Yeah, I mean, and generally thought of as a kind of a ministerial function office, like just do the bureaucratic work and we're good. It's important, but yeah, I have my own thoughts, but Butch?
I just think, Escambia County politics just can't seem to get out from underneath this black cloud. And
agreed.
This needs to be, I agree with Jeremy, and I think if you don't let him run, that it's going to be a bad scar.
Finding who's to blame in this is, I think, a fairly complicated thing, because it seems most likely that the supervisor of elections office, where they did the wrong, is in telling him he's all good and not doing a timely secondary check that would have found out that maybe something wasn't 100%. Because they would have cured it. They've told other people to cure things. They've cured it. And that was, if we hadn't had the John Johnson episode, we wouldn't have had as much clarity on all of this as we do. And Robert Bender saying, hey, this is why you don't come in Friday at 11:51.
Yeah.
Well, he came in Wednesday in the middle of the day, and then the ball got dropped. So,
but even if the supervisor said nothing, but when you post his name as a qualified candidate.
Right. And then later that night, we're good.
Our bad.
Yeah, I don't know how they found this out a week later, how that transpired. And it's a really unfortunate look, of course, because it's the election against the guy who's making the disqualifying somebody, essentially. And
yeah.
Now all of a sudden, for anybody who has any kind of weird suspicions about, bad motives for Robert Bender, I mean, this is... Of course they believe that's what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't, because I know Robert and I don't believe that. But I still think the right answer is let him on the ballot. And I think a judge is going to do that too.
And I think that it's an opportunity for Robert Bender to say, hey, listen, I've been on the job for...
6 months?
6 months
yeah.
at the most at the moment. And this is my first time going through... I got immediately thrown into an election for the presidential preference primary.
Right.
This is my first time going through this.
Shifting
was a
sands on the Form 1, Form 6 stuff.
Yeah,
right.
Like it's the first time I've done this. This candidate, we said they were, had we not said they were qualified, we wouldn't let them on the ballot. We made the mistake of saying they're qualified. We're going to go to the State Ethics Commission, the Secretary of State, to say, hey,
yep.
I made a mistake by saying this person was qualified. Can we allow them to be on the ballot?
Right.
I do think that that race becomes extraordinarily interesting with two Republicans, because there's nobody else in the race, and it's two Republicans running
open
in.
Open primary.
An open primary.
If he gets back on the
if
ballot.
If he gets into it. It's an open primary that takes place at the general election. I think. It's not.
No, I think it's the primary. It's an open primary at the primary, and that settles the race.
So then that will, fortunately for the two of them, an open primary is going to significantly cut down Democrats and nonpartisan folks from coming out and voting on primary election day, because there's not going to be a
not
lot of Democratic
many.
Primaries.
Yeah, that's true, as opposed to the general.
As
you're
opposed
right.
to the general election. If it goes to the general election, you're running in the entire county of Escambia County, where Robert Bender has never run before. He's only run in District 4.
That's true.
And then Pam Childers' husband, there is so much bad blood between the two of them that it's maybe it becomes a race of who do you like less as opposed to who do you like because of what it is when they're running to people they've never really had to run before in a countywide election.
And, you know, you always have to have the election in order to find out what matters to people. But when I look at it, I think, okay, I'm a voter who doesn't know anything else about these two candidates. I don't care or know about Bruce's background. I don't care or know about Bender's background. But the one thing I do know is we've got a guy who was appointed by the governor who seems like he messed up, you know, and almost cost this other guy to compete against him. I suppose some people might say, well, maybe Bruce messed up, and if you can't file your elections forms properly, maybe you shouldn't be overseeing the elections either. I mean, you know, I can kind of see.
Well, and I find it hard to believe that the thing that I struggle with when I read the story is how did Pam successfully file everything she needed, but Bruce couldn't do the same thing?
Well, I think, which is, you know, and again, to hear his version of the story, they asked the people at the supervisor elections office, and they were told, yes, yes, check mark, thumbs up all the way through continually. And to me, that's the big problem here is the job of the supervisor of elections office is to facilitate the election, and they actually inhibited the election in this case. John's got traffic on the fives.
That's right. If you're traveling from East Milton into Milton, you're going to see some major delays right there. No accident to let you know about. Other than that, I-10, I-110 traffic flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much. So what's your read on the future? This is going to be – they're going to file suit. I mean, what's the judge going to say?
I think he's going to get the run.
That Bruce will be on the ballot?
Yes.
I think it doesn't go to a judge. I think Robert Bender gets advice over the next couple of days and goes to the Secretary of State to see if he can allow him to run. I think it doesn't get to that point.
I hope that's the
case. You never know anybody, and you just never know anybody. Every interaction I've had with Robert Bender is he's a pretty relatively honest, good citizen.
Same.
I've never had a bad interaction with the guy.
Same.
I don't see him being like in a smoke-filled room, tapping his fingers like Mr. Burns trying to figure out a political thing.
Right.
I think they made a mistake, and now he's got to figure out how to work through it. And my guess is, if he's not allowed back on the ballot, it's not Robert Bender being stubborn about it. It's he's going to get advice from the Secretary of State and the other people on how can we fix this. And it would be a situation where they're just told legally you can't.
I personally have no doubt that Robert Bender does, and will want to do the right thing.
I agree.
And the only question is, you know, what does that look like? But as a voter, I want my candidates. I want my choice. I want democracy. Mm-hmm. And it seems like democracy has been thwarted here, and the question is, can you remedy that? And if you can't remedy that, who do you blame?
Yeah. So. And have you, all I have seen is the Facebook post that Bruce Childress put. Have you spoken to Robert Bender?
I spoke to Robert yesterday.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he basically, he gave a kind of a boilerplate, comment that we posted. And he's not saying any more than that, which I assume is because on legal advice, don't get into disclosing things, you know, which is also awkward because I've always been able to call Robert and he'll tell me all kinds of stuff, you know, historically. So it's just very, very unfortunate. And the people who, as you said, Butch, view Escambia County politics as being just, my God, always it's something with this place. And here we have not one but two weird little dramas in a teapot, which, you know, at least the other one you could kind of blame on the candidate for late filing. You can't do that here.
Can you introduce me to the people who don't look at Escambia County politics and see that? Because I would love to meet them.
The people who don't think that of Escambia County politics don't know that we have a county commission.
Okay.
They don't know
that's
that
fair.
The city doesn't report to the county. They don't know that there are state representatives who are different from, say, for example, ECUA boards. They don't vote in. I mean,
so
you know,
more,
and there are lots of these people. Okay,
more
there are,
keeping up with the Kardashians than keeping up with the drama.
They don't.
The
they don't have
county.
Any idea. Yeah. And you know, so okay, you know, these are my neighbors too. And part of the benefits of living in a peacetime, prosperous world like the United States is people can afford to be that. They can afford to be uninformed and indifferent. Switching gears, you were telling me that, you know, in case you thought this was drama, hold my beer. Lake County?
Yeah. Lake County, there is one of the constitutional office positions, I think it's property tax, tax collector or property appraiser, one of the two. A former state representative, well-loved state representative in the area, goes to file on the last day. There's nobody else running because everybody knows this guy is running.
Okay.
And he's going to file as a write-in candidate to basically
to save the $5,000 or whatever.
Save the $5,000 to run. Files at like 11:45, and then allegedly the supervisor of elections calls up his brother, who is running for in certain counties, they have like hospital boards and those kind of things. You run for a hospital board seat. It's very similar to Soil and Water.
So he was already in a process.
He was already in a process, walks in the door at 11:59 and switches over to run for that position as the only Republican candidate. So the only Republican candidate that will be on the ballot is the brother of the supervisor of elections. And the guy who I believe maybe holds the position at the moment is not even on the ballot because he filed as a write-in
to save a
buck. To save a buck. So
his name won't even be on the ballot because it's write-in.
You should be pay the $5,000 to get on the ballot.
Oh my God!
And then on the other end, the supervisor of elections should not be saying, "Hey,
bro,
come over and file for this position. You can walk into
law.
So it's all over the state.
Do we need any more evidence that this election process needs revision?
Between
the shenanigans here and other counties.
From the write-ins to the closed primaries to the, absolute reluctance or resistance to any kind of instant runoff or ranked choice voting. I mean,
I will tell you that runoffs for the past, I've been in Florida for 20 years, runoffs have had zero ground, zero steam. And I think over the past 2 years, there's at least conversation starting about maybe we need to go to a runoff system.
Okay.
So is that going to happen tomorrow? No. Is it going to happen maybe in the next 10 years? I think there's at least some conversation starting that maybe we should go to a runoff system.
So we talk about this fairly regularly, especially in this election series, but I am, and long have been, a massive proponent of the ranked choice voting, instant runoff voting, where you vote for all the candidates in order of preference, right? And then they work through, they get rid of the least, the least performing person, and eventually you get somebody's going to win a majority. It's the reason you do this. Somebody wins a majority, but you don't have to actually conduct five elections to get to that result. Is the two-party system, are they just opposed to this because they feel like it chips away at their power? Is that the problem?
Well, I think the current system just favors the incumbent so much.
It very much does.
But whenever you – so hence the reluctance to change anything.
Okay. All right.
So, any system that allows people to be seated without a majority of the vote is – there's something wrong
with
that.
It's questionable at best. I mean, the Electoral College allows that, right? People win presidency with a plurality of the popular vote. They can't win with the plurality of the electoral vote. But, that's one of the objections people raise against the presidential process is you don't get majority. Well, you get majority of the electoral votes. I mean, you do get a majority. You just don't get it of the popular vote. So, I can see that. Ten Commandments in schools. Big story this week, Louisiana, along with a small historical note that this was the basis of this is taught in schools for 300 years and now we don't. You can put up the Mayflower Compact. You can put up the Northwest Ordinance, the Declaration of Independence. But really, it's the Ten Commandments. That's the big issue.
Right.
Shouldn't it? Will it survive Supreme Court review?
I don't think it'll survive. And I think it's unfortunate that it went this path. I mean, my first question to anybody that opposed it is, well, which one don't you agree with?
Well, the Sabbath. I mean, nobody follows that.
But all that aside, and though we mostly teach all those things that are in the Ten Commandments, because it comes right out of a religious document, I think it's not going to survive.
Yeah, I am naively optimistic that it may survive with this court, with some of the other elements of that law. But I think if you ask me to bet money, probably not. Jeremy?
It depends on what and how. I think the Ten Commandments may stay in as long as there's something kind of like, what is it? You got to have the Church of the Spaghetti Monster doing presentations at the Capitol and things along those things.
Church of the Spaghetti Monster to you, by the way.
Yeah. As long as there is some allowing for other religious documents.
And there's not.
And so I think that may be the reason it's struck down. Again, I think of the Ten Commandments, there's probably two of them that other religions don't also. I mean, there's not a lot of
religions. Have no other gods, make no idols.
Yeah.
Don't take the Lord's name in vain. That's fairly common, but the Sabbath is also special. The rest of them are all interpersonal.
Like, don't covet, don't murder.
Right.
Those things, I think, are pretty universally accepted as all religions. Maybe not the Church of the Beloved Spaghetti Monster.
That's right. And that's kind of the point I was making the other day, too, is. I think a lot of people who advocate for having the Ten Commandments in public spaces or in the school want to sort of put on the show as if, who can object to don't murder?
Yeah.
Who can object to don't steal? And what I want to say is, Yeah, but the first part. You know, you got to be honest about the first part is overtly religious, and that's the stuff that people object to. But at the same time, be honest. That's why you want it in the school. I mean, if somebody simply published the last six commandments, you wouldn't be satisfied with that, the edited, you know, the Reader's Digest version. You want all 10 for reasons, you know, and that's the issue. John Pickens got traffic on the fives.
That's right. Not seeing any accidents to let you know about I-10, I-110 flowing very smoothly. Even Highway 90 through Pace is looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. I appreciate that. You know, you and I have a – you're the Navy guy, okay, Butch, former Navy guy, but still you keep in touch pretty closely. We were talking just – I think it was yesterday I had mentioned a story about where the aircraft carriers are. We have three on site and one in transit to replace one, so that's three going to be three. We have four more that are preparing to deploy and then three more that are in kind of long-term repairs, which seems like a fairly normal rotation, but that really means that two-thirds of our carriers are not in service right now.
Right.
And we are in a world that's at war in several places, and they're old. I mean, 50 years old, and we've only got one new one, but that one's back in repair. So, I don't know. Do we have enough?
Well, I would say no. And, you know, Jeremy and I were talking about our former, you know, national defense strategy and fighting two wars simultaneously and all that. And the bare minimum number of carriers was 12, and we'd never go below that. Well, we're below that.
Right. We're at 11 now.
And all that is, you know, the games we play with defense budgets. And budgets in general. I mean, to build an aircraft carrier, it takes a lot of lead time. Mm-hmm. A lot of lead time. You got and the Navy needs to know, the Department of Defense needs to know way up front the money's going to be there.
You can't make long-term plans on year-by-year continuing resolutions for budget.
In 2000, we both happened to be in Washington, D.C. I was working the congressional side. He was in the Navy side talking about budgets. And at the time, the armed forces were saying we need to get away from the idea that we're going to be fighting ground wars anymore. It's all going to be airs and drones, and we need to get away from some of this stuff. And we've been fighting a ground war pretty much every day since September 11th, 2001.
Right.
And the Army has been playing – the military in general has been playing catch-up since they tried to go through this military – you know, the big buzzword was transformation. And I think that it's time to, is it expensive? Yes, it's very expensive.
Right.
Is it worth every dime that we put into it to preserve the American, you know, not just our way of life, but the idea of freedom around the world? In my opinion, absolutely. And so it's just a matter of making the commitment to doing it, which is hard because it costs a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, you know, discouraging war is expensive. The only thing more expensive is having war. That's why you spend so much to discourage war.
But I would say, you know, from the first nuclear aircraft carrier in 1961 and the first ballistic missile submarines in the same time frame, that has been the core of our foreign policy and our national defense policy ever since then, the flexibility that technology provides.
Absolutely. Butch Hansen, Jeremy Evans, thank you for joining me on The Wrap. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.